Okay, we're going to step in another area of intrigue, as it were, with my next guest. His book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, is loaded with potential. That's a great title. And the book is terrific. It's the work of Michael Tsarian. He's an Irishman, born in Ireland. He's an expert on the occult histories. Now, occult doesn't mean evil. Remember that. It means secret of Ireland and America. He's done many things. He likes to go at it in the great tradition of some of the great men of our time and earlier times, including Emmanuel Velikovsky, William Bramley, whose book is really a classic, Barbara Marciniak, Lawrence Gardner, and Eric von Däniken. Michael considers the consequences to civilization of extraterrestrial involvement and clarifies much of the disinformation about Atlantis and prehistory. He also addresses the orchestrated chaos of modern times and reveals how the political and military machinations of the present have indeed origins in the events of the ancient past. So let's find out some about what he does and what he thinks and his views of all of this as we welcome him to the program. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Jeff. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Tell me more about your last name.
Oh, that's... Well, as you said in the introduction, I am from Ireland, but my mother was actually from the Himalayas. She was Indian from the northern Himalayas.
Ah.
And that's where that name comes from. It's probably one of the reasons also why I actually got interested in this kind of subject matter, because as lots of scholars realize, there are tremendous connections racially between the Celtic people and the, you know, the Indians. There's long been speculation about the movement of the races.
Interesting, yeah. Well, we have the Basques and others. These, we can't trace them back far enough, but yes, there are a lot of ties and threads running all over the place. It's interesting.
Certainly in my life, it was a conundrum to be both, you know, Irish and Indian, because
yeah.
That's a very combustible mixture, and you have the mystics on one side of the Indian, and you got the rebels on the Irish side, so it's a hell of a mix.
Yeah, well, I assume you're single. And
Oh, yeah, you can say that again.
Yeah. All right. What does Tsarian mean? Is that like Smith or Jones in...
I really don't know. I think there's a village in Tibet or a town in Tibet that has that name.
Mm-hmm.
Various people send me, origins. I'm very interested in word origins. But it's really hard to say. They say the word T-S-A-R or Tsar.
Mm-hmm.
It was an old word for, you know, lord or king or what have you. You know, mm-hmm. some people have connected it to the sun.
Right.
It's a very interesting thing to look into, but nothing definitive yet.
Right. Well, you're not running for king, so it doesn't matter.
No, exactly, you know.
All right. Now, how do we go about, as a researcher and an author, of clearing up some of the mysteries about Atlantis? You say you can bring these things into focus.
Yeah.
How do you do it when we really don't have all that? What we really have to go on,
right.
Basically, is Plato and Edgar Cayce.
We have more to go on, except that modern scholarship is, as the usual, very tunnel vision. It's not just within the academic world that they are tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is that I've also seen a lot of disinformation and a lot of tunnel vision, even within the so-called, you know, alternative community.
I would second that in a heartbeat, and
right.
I tell you the truth. I think most of it is pure speculation at best.
And it doesn't need to be, because if people do their homework, which is not just...
hit a few websites and
yes, exactly.
This steal is, a little bit of information right. and mix it in with your own ego, and you got a book. That's how.
Yeah. And they basically roll off the press, and each one either repeating the nonsense of the first lot,
right,
or just coming up with the wildest speculations. I mean, I'm glad that there's something out there better than nothing, because I like to look at the idea of having more knowledge.
Right.
Like, you know, Bogreit has said many times, get your arms around as much of the information as you can.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm not a favor of just wild speculation and diversity and chaos. You know, there has to be a purist approach as well to knowledge, because we can, like we are now, we're an information overkill. And
right.
I don't know, maybe it is my Irish blood or something. I get really personally peeved with that when there's only half truth, I think is more dangerous than lies.
Oh, amen.
You know,
yeah.
I set to work about doing that. That was really originally... Because I've been studying this since I was 13. It's always been an interesting hobby. But when it started to turn to become a professional thing and do books and do conferences and talks and radio and TV, I think that the main motive was just what you said, to basically start just very simply to clear up the disinformation. Now,
right.
It became more. It's become more over time. But originally the idea was to just go, look, These individuals are not telling the truth. Their books are filled with disinformation.
Well, they're filled with stolen. It's called plagiarism, and
yes.
It's funny because, as you said, and very appropriately, so many times someone will dish up a full course meal of BS, and pieces of it start showing up in book after book after book. And nobody gives credit. It's funny how there's no attribution anymore. Everyone presents their book, his or hers, almost everyone.
Because there's, you know what it is? It's a loss of respect for knowledge. It's a loss of respect for the traditions of the ancients, for real, true research. Now, you get certain people like the Michael Cremos of the world, you know, and of course, you get the wonderful scholars who are out there. And I'm not pointing fingers at individuals when I think of this. I'm purely a lover of knowledge. That's what philosophy means. It's a lover of wisdom, a lover of knowledge. It's not my position to point to individuals.
Right.
But certainly I can point to their scholarship. And for instance, Zachariah Sitchin, God love him. He's done some fantastic work. But I'm just using him as a case in point now to illustrate to your listeners what we're talking about here. In that man's work, he specializes only in the Babylonian Sumerian record. There is almost next to no cross-referencing with all the other mythologies of the world, you know, which is needed to be done. Here you are studying a thing that is mythology. You need to cross-reference your findings with the Aryan, with the Indian, with the African, with the Mayan, with the Celtic. And he does not do this. He's found out wonderful things, but you must cross-reference it because there's glaring errors in some of the work that needs to be erased. Because, and if he had done this cross-referencing thing, which many scholars have who came before him, then they would have tidied up some of the more erroneous areas regarding the planet X and regarding Atlantis and regarding the Anunnaki and what have you.
Right.
You know, my work is comparative. You compare all the religions because, as Emmanuel Velikovsky knew and as Commons Beaumont understood, they're all saying the same thing. They're all the races of the ancient world were referring to the same series of events, the same, events that took place throughout this planet. And the times may look different when we interpret them, or the poetic language, especially in Celtic Ireland. Why do we think that when people read my book, they have such a shock and thinking that the Celtic record has such an incredible archive of knowledge about these matters? Because it's always been put before us as fairy folk tales, a magical tradition, something not to be taken seriously. And here's one of the most powerful archives of knowledge, the Arthurian and Celtic tradition, that talk about the war of the gods, the coming of evil into the world, the subjugation of women, the fall from grace, the fall from truth. All of that is in there, that they talk about super weaponry, advanced weaponry. They talk about genetic manipulation. It's all there for the eye to read.
Yeah, but nobody knows that. They don't study.
No, because it's been put before us habitually as either fiction or something that's not worth serious consideration.
I remember I brought Eric von Daniken to Santa Barbara and presented him once. And I'm sure you've met him on a number of occasions. And Eric is a wild man. He is so full. He's like, you have the same kind of intensity. You're not quite as excitable, but
no,
I can see it. He has a great appreciation for classic scholarship.
And you know what's even more impressive about Eric von Daniken is that he has withstood the most unbelievable onslaught of abuse and vitriolic attack for over 25 years, and he stood his ground, and he's back with a big smile on his face going, I was right, I held to my truth, I'm not vindictive, and we're going to revisit this again because the time is right now. There's more interest than there ever has been from people to study these great, interesting mysteries. We're no longer going to fall for what we've been told from these corridors of propaganda anymore. And there he is standing, you know, again, has now some PBS shows or Discovery shows or whatever, you know, and I'm congratulate the guy for holding his ground, because he was just literally, as many of these scholars are, terrorized.
Well, look what they did to Velikovsky.
He's always on my mind. You know, my book is dedicated to Emmanuel Velikovsky and Commons Beaumont and individuals of that nature because of the tremendous losses that these individuals, and our world needs to know about these lost scholars, you know.
Well, Wilhelm Reich as well, another martyr.
Wilhelm Reich is one of my main mentors. I've studied all his work and I have the greatest respect for the man.
Right.
And these are the people that could see. We're wondering why there's so much travesty in our world, why there's so much criminality and injustice and disease and whatnot. My God, if we don't realize that we've already suppressed and murdered and incarcerated those very people who had our answers. It's not that we don't have answers. We have had plenty of solution givers and solution teachers. But what do we do to them? We've got to revisit their work because we're not going to get anywhere in the next 10 years unless we revisit these great teachers' work.
Right. Well, we kill them is what we do with them. We still burn people at the stake, figuratively.
Absolutely. I bet you a lot of your listeners do not know that Carl Sagan, his day job was Cornell, University, whatever. His nighttime job, or his main job that he was employed for, was to hound Emanuel Velikovsky to death. Everyone's heard of Carl Sagan, but nobody's heard of Emanuel Velikovsky. They don't know that Emanuel Velikovsky was completely lambasted, was professionally ridiculed, and Carl Sagan was the guy leading those refutations.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, and yet there's not a single discovery or invention or prophecy that Emanuel Velikovsky made that has been denied or
disproven.
Shown to be false.
Right.
They're all shown to be correct.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Velikovsky is a name we have discussed on the air here for many years.
I'm so happy to hear that. In fact, I have the greatest respect for you, Jeff, personally, and also for your show, because it's like an oasis in a sea of disinformation. It's very, very privileged to hear. It keeps me feeling, very optimistic because of these kinds of the show that you're doing,
Thank you, Michael. All right, well, I'm glad to have Michael on the program tonight. I think you can already tell he is deadly serious about classical scholarly research. No hocus pocus, no plagiarism, no internet browsing and then publish it yourself stuff. And there's everybody's got a book now or two, and so few of them are honestly worth reading because they're all derivative of other people's flawed works. I mean, there's no real new research, Michael, to speak of that I see come down the road very often anymore.
Very rarely. And, I think that one of the problems why we haven't really understood a lot of the common denominator facts about our world and who we are is because there's so much information, the average individual doesn't have the 30 years that, say, I've put in to doing this homework. I get compliments from authors and, readers all the time saying, you've saved me doing the 3 decades of, work in your videos, your DVDs, and in your book. You've saved us because this is a monumental subject. It's a very important subject.
Well,
but it's not something that the average person can squeeze into their busy schedule.
No, they can't. And, in fact, because it is so intense, many people just won't. They can't do it. It's too much for them. And that's okay. The book is Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and a Genetic Manipulation. And we are, of course, playing God now with genes, playing with genes. And, I don't know where it's going to end, but probably not in a very good place, because of the propensity for humankind to do whatever it can do, right or wrong. If they can do it, they're going to do it. It's a very dicey and dangerous situation we are in now. But this is not new. Genetic manipulation apparently has been around for a long time. We just weren't the ones doing it. That's the bottom line. If I can, before we start on the book, a lot of people, and I really think we should honor this man with just a couple of minutes, Emanuel Velikovsky. It's a name that people have heard, but they don't know a damn thing about him. And let's just do a couple minutes on what he stood for and what he actually was able to put together in his own intellect.
Well, first of all, Emanuel Velikovsky is a man who was an extremely erudite scholar in his own sense, but he had one thing that always will put him or anyone else against the orthodox, and that was he was a free thinker. He had the scholarship, so let's get that straight. He wasn't just some, fringe, freaky, hippie out there, waxing lyrical.
He wasn't a daydreamer, I understand.
No, he was a good friend of Sigmund Freud. They worked together on a book about Egypt. But Velikovsky was a remarkable individual who did not just buy into what the orthodox individuals have been saying about cosmic catastrophe. So Emanuel Velikovsky wrote about our solar system. He was an expert on the solar system. He knew that the planet Venus would be found to be the only planet in our system that would go on an anti-clockwise axis, which it was found that it does.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that the temperature of Venus would be exactly 800 degrees, which it later was discovered.
And this is in the 1950s,
yes,
folks.
Long before any of this was ever even remotely discovered, he understood many things about the celestial heavens. And he also, most importantly, why a lot of people need to know about Emanuel Velikovsky is that he was the one who basically understood that all the different civilizations and countries, no matter if it's the Vikings or the Celtic people or the Maoris or the New Zealanders or the Maya, they're all talking about catastrophe, but it's always been considered nonsense because, you see, it appeared that they're all talking about these events at different times. He realized that, no, they're not. These individuals just have different calendars. But if you make an objective calendar and you plot all of these individual time levels, mm-hmm. predictions, and you put them on to an objective calendar, they all turn out to be at the exact same time historically. So he basically rectified this lie that the Orthodox was hiding under, saying, well, of course, none of these people could be telling you the truth because they're all dating this thing at different times, and therefore it's preposterous and we didn't think about it.
Pretty shallow way to dismiss
they'll pull on anything. Because these people have a lot to hide. They have inserted fallacious ice ages, millions of years in length, between us and our ancestors because they're desperate. There's a cabal in this world that is absolutely desperate. We know about different secret agendas, but what people need to realize is that there's a mega agenda coming down to us from about 50,000 years ago. It is imperative for the forces that control this planet to not let us understand where we actually come from, that we have had high civilizations, just like Gerald Hancock and others are now discovering. But Velikovsky and Beaumont and many writers from the 19th century had already been discovering this. And Velikovsky's work is absolutely important because he said that, look, the Mayans maybe use a Venusian calendar or a lunar calendar. The Celtic people over here use a tree calendar. You know, everyone uses a different calendar. So, of course, they're dating it in their own secular time at a different time. But let's not mistake the fact that these catastrophes happened at the same time.
Right, and every culture, just to repeat what Michael said, has at its ancient basis a catastrophe. There's always one there. Now, how far we go back? Somewhere between 11,500 years and 12,500, where Edgar Cayce, of course, and so many others, and the geological record now shows something catastrophic happened.
Good point.
But that was not the only ancient catastrophe. That was one.
Now, in my book, and that's exactly right, there are two catastrophes. I mean, of course, in the millions of years our planet has been here, there's obviously, you know, can't refute that. There has been a lot of travesties and upheavals. But the two that very much affected or influenced our actual history are very recent in time. In history, they're very, very recent. And one was the famous deluge. But that happened about 50,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then there was a polar shift, a polar axial shift that was happening about 13,500 years ago. And what your audience needs to understand is what we've discovered, and I talk about extensively, is that the science is now in to prove that Atlantis existed. And this comes from orthodox official science from Oxford and Cambridge University and from the MIT. To prove that not only Atlantis existed, but there was cataclysms in the very recent past, and that there was this polar shift that sank the continents of the ancient world.
Indeed. All right. Back in just a couple minutes, we'll continue our excellent conversation with Michael Tesarian. His book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, is available. Just click on his name and take a look at his beautiful website. It's loaded, and we will continue. Kind of starts out and sums it up. During the next 10 years, the human race is destined to finally discover the facts about its true origins and its destiny. And it may come far quicker than 10 years, Michael, but I think you're right. We are literally teetering on the edge of so many of these old paradigms of obfuscation, lies, and deceit and distortion falling apart. The Internet's playing a role on it, but there is a great awakening among people who are interested in that kind of thing.
This is what happens. I saw it in Belfast. The idea is that sometimes people need a good kick up the you-know-where in order to get back to the original principles that undergird our societies. Well, we slip away from that.
We're going to go through, I'm afraid, a lot of very deadly and disastrous times before we get there. But
that's all right. See, what we have to understand, that the people of the light
have nothing
to fear.
Cycle. Right. No, that's true. That's a normal cycle.
It's a normal cycle. I'm so glad to hear you say that because I keep, you know, when I do a talk, people will come over to me and go, you know, and I'm very solution oriented. I don't ever stop without giving major solutions, but still you have people who are in fear. And it's like the old cop dramas where they say, if you're not guilty, you have nothing to fear.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing that goes now historically. If you are connected, if you're centered, if your moral body and your spiritual body and your emotional body are sound, and you have not climbed on others, and your karma is in good shape, you have nothing to worry about, no matter if it's earth changes. Because again, you see, there's a whole culture out there in the media to create a paranoid society. You know, we have a situation out in the world in which they're desperate to have us fearing everything. You know, all you hear about is identity theft and, you know, germs in our houses and coming epidemics and, oh my God, terrorists under the bed and, you know, food is impure and weather patterns are getting distorted and people just shiver under the bed without realizing, hang on a minute, this is all disseminated for a purpose in order to get you to be in paranoia, to fear, to be begging government to save your ass. You know, we don't understand that a lot of this is totally unreal.
And all delivered, all injected, the masses are being inoculated with all of this crap.
Right. By
television, sure.
It's a diet. It's a drip feed diet. David Icke calls the television the hypnotist in the corner, you know, and he's so right.
Yeah.
It's a situation in which we are being drip fed. I mean, you know, we have to realize that this is a very, Aldous Huxley, who is one of the prime movers in this conspiracy, he called it a dictatorship without tears. You know, would you mind if I read a small quote from him so that people
understand? No, go ahead. Aldous Huxley, not to be confused with George Orwell, friends, if you're not well read, don't confuse the two.
And the reason why I'm reading these quotes is because I want to emphasize that we talked about scholarship earlier on. In life, when you are into these alternative subjects, you're often termed a conspiracy nut. But you see, what these detractors don't understand is that if you look up the word conspiracy in a proper sociological dictionary, like the Collins Dictionary,
mm-hmm.
or get online and look up the word conspiracy, it will tell you that a conspiracy is only something that is reprehensible if there's two things that happen. One is that if it is too zealously or overzealously delivered,
mm-hmm.
and if it is without any backup, okay? That is what is reprehensible about any conspiracy. Well, as you know from the people on your show, and, you know, in my work also, you know, yes, I do believe there's a conspiracy out there. I don't believe it's all coincidence.
Oh, I don't, yeah. Wait, look, here's the bottom line. We don't need to be labeled conspiracy theorists. We don't believe in conspiracy theory. We believe in conspiracies because the world is run, has been, and
That's
always
right.
will be run on conspiracy
right.
bases.
And since there are detractors out there, I want to make sure that they understand fully that in my work specifically, the delivery of these conspiracy facts is both eloquent and backed up by unbelievable proof. I go straight to the horse's mouth. I'm not so interested, like we talked earlier, about other writers in the genre. I go to the Carol Quigleys, and I go to the Colonel Mandel Houses, and I go to the original sources, you know, the Adam Weishaupts and the Albert Pikes.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to their work. These are the people who are the main movers in this. I've gone to the Freemasons and the Bilderbergers and their own work. So that people they're not hearing anything from me. I'm not, you know, asserting any point of view. You're never going to hear that from me.
As any great researcher, you're supposed to be a conduit, which is what you're saying.
Right, yeah. And here is a perfect proof. Here's Aldous Huxley in his book, A Brave New World Revisited. He says the 21st century will be the era of the world controllers. The older dictators fell because they could never supply their subjects with enough bread, enough circuses, enough miracles and mysteries. Under a scientific dictatorship, education will really work. Most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. There seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. What he's saying there is that, I mean, two things come out of this. Not only is the man admitting cold-bloodedly that there is a conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
that they're working overnight to mm-hmm. enslave the human race, the man has the utter condescension to then say, but don't worry, folks. You're going to love it. You're going to like it. We're bending over backwards not only to enslave you. Please understand, we're making it a dictatorship with smile. We're going to make it a dictatorship with tears. You're going to love it, and you're going to love us for giving it to you.
And
if you look around in this world today, you know, I hate to point this out, but unfortunately, the dreams of these maniacs has actually come to pass. The worst nightmares of Marquis de Sade and George Orwell and Bertrand Russell and their whole clan are actually reality today.
Thanks to the ingeniousness of these people, they were brilliant in their own way.
They were brilliant.
And now they have unmatched technology. I suspect in the ancient past technology of this sort was around, but they have it now. And when he talks about scientific, he's talking about technology.
He's talking about, you see, the word technology is a very interesting word in itself. It doesn't mean what a lot of people mean. These are social engineers, people who are dedicated to controlling the masses. They understand that you don't just come out of Harvard and Cornell and suddenly get the reins of government in order to be able to steer the ship of state. That's a very complex thing. There's detailed operating manuals about how you control the masses of the human race. And in my work and other researchers' work, in the work of Jordan Maxwell, David Icke, others, we're trying to draw attention to the way in which this is done, because if you think you know the answers, you won't ask the question. And we have to discover the subtle and ingenious methodologies. You know, in my work especially, I go very much into showing you what is the nature of these forces that control us? Because we can't be free unless we're intimately aware of the kinds of psychic dictatorship that's being purveyed in our midst.
Lots of quotes in your book.
Yeah, because again, from the horse's mouth.
You're building upon the actual work. You're not citing references and pontificating. You're doing it the right way. You're building blocks with irrefutable, incontrovertible facts.
And I have a great belief. One of the reasons why I don't assert any major point of view in the book, I put these facts in front of people so they can make up their own minds, is because I have an unshattered faith in individuals' intelligence. I'm not like the school teachers and, you know, the scientists who condescend and look down at us. I believe we are more than intelligent. We are much more powerful than these controllers. We have the ability to change the future.
Well, that's one of the big things.
We have the ability to make up our own mind.
Exactly. And that's one of the big things that they have sought so hard to keep from us, our own power. That's what it's all about. If not disempowerment, misdirection, diversion, disinformation, it all boils down to the same thing. We are being massively socially manipulated, engineered, programmed to react, not to proact, but to react from the cradle to the grave to the agenda given to us. And most people, unfortunately, are being led right along that pathway and happily following along. All right, let's just try and skim through some of this fascinating story in Michael's book, Atlantis Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. A lot of people, of course, talk about the ancient visitors, those who came here and interacted with humans. And there are many stories about how it is alleged they interacted. But the point is the Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them, left. That's what almost all researchers say. But Michael Tsarian doesn't think they left at all.
No, I'm very much in the line of what William Bramley, whose book I very much respect. And
What is it? Don't tell me. The Gods of Eden.
Right.
Okay,
when you look into the Celtic record, my Celtic ancestors are not telling anybody that these Nephilim characters have left, nor does the Book of Enoch, nor do the vast majority. You know, Jack Barringer, who wrote a book called Past Shock, he says that there are 30,000 texts, and that's just the ones that remain. We know how many books have been burned and how many have been sequestered away, but of the books that even remain, there's 30,000 that talk about visitations from other planets, and believe me, whether those are the Popol Vuh or any of the other records, they're not talking. I don't know where this whole idea that these guys are lost brothers and they've suddenly gone back to their own planet and they're just going to come down here and save us from ourselves, later on. It's all total disinformation. The Nephilim are, first of all, not our brothers. They are our makers because they crossed their own alien DNA with us back approximately 50,000 years ago. And they've not gone anywhere. Their descendants have been ruling the world and moving history, manipulating history, moving it forward because of their own agendas, which I go into in the book. They are behind the major secret societies of the world.
Now, are these, excuse me, Michael, but are they the hybrid offspring of the originals, or are they the actual originals?
No, the originals, this is a very interesting thing. To answer your question from how we started this, the original Nephilim who came from outside our planet, they are not thought to be alive. Of course, these people do have very long lives, but they don't live for like 11,000 years. So it has been their descendants, certainly. Mm-hmm. And that's why bloodline, certain scholars like Lawrence Gardner and others, and even Gerald Hancock have been looking into this whole question of the bloodline.
Amazing. What they've found is just amazing.
Isn't it? It's wonderful.
Well, you look at Bush and Kerry. Look, they're all related.
Precisely.
They're all in the bloodline.
Precisely.
It's not a joke.
And what people have to realize is it's not just the figures that I call the overworld figures that are bloodline. Many of the heads of banks and the heads of think tanks and the heads of schools and even people in the media circuit are members of these cults and are bloodline connected. They may look like Smith or Jones to us, but they're certainly not the girl or boy next door. We have to understand there's unofficial families as well that we don't hear about that are bloodline connected. But yeah, the original Nephilim, it's their offspring that have been controlling the world. They keep tabs on who they are. They are certainly behind the Freemasonic orders and the different secret societies who maintain the records and they keep the secrets. I mean, there's a Masonic degree. Did you know that there's actually a Masonic degree, which is actually called the Knight of the Great Secret?
It's above 33rd.
That's right. It's a very high degree in Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. I have the information here somewhere. That actually talks about the very illustrious degrees where they are the keeper of the royal secret. That's it. It's the keepers of the royal secret. What royal secret?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the secret that the Templars kept, that there has been forces on our planet that have genetically manipulated us.
Right.
And we talked earlier about what my motivations were for getting into this subject.
Hold on with that. We can also suggest that they have genetically manipulated us to keep us back, to keep us down, to keep us primitive, easier to control. And I that's one reason why I think we haven't, quote, learned from history, and we're still killing because genetically we've been held back one way or the other.
Well, there's no question about that. In fact, there was actually the reason for them, as you say, doing this to us was literally to create servants, to have a race of people mm-hmm. that would serve, you know, them, because they
a
didn't
serving
want
class,
to be looking after themselves. Yeah.
Right. You sure? I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah. The idea was that when you come here and you're vastly advanced, you know, you want a slave, a race of slaves. In the Popol Vuh, there's an incredible quote about that. I mean, you find it in the Bible and you find it in the Book of Enoch. But in the Popol Vuh, this is for people who are interested in the South American aspect of this. In the Popol Vuh, it says, there's a quote. It says, "Let us make him who shall nourish and sustain us. What shall we do to be invoked, to be remembered in earth?" This is the God speaking, right? "We have tried with our first creatures, but we could not make them venerate us. So then, let us try to make obedient, respectful beings who shall nourish and sustain us." Now, that's just one passage, which, first of all, tells us why it was of great interest to the Spanish conquistadors to be burning these books, because if that's only an example of what was in them, we know that they didn't want these chronicles to be letting us know who was doing what to whom.
Mm-hmm.
But what that passage also brings out is that, yes, you're right. They wanted servants. They wanted slaves to help them. This is what Zachariah Sitchin's work brings out. And in the Celtic tradition, it's the same idea.
Now,
they would suppress the centers of intelligence of the human being
right.
and cut them off, make them divided from themselves.
That's right. There is, I can't remember the part of the brain. Am I close? Anterior commissure?
Sounds right.
Something like that. Anyway, there are portions of the brain which are basically unplugged.
Yeah.
Which are genetically unplugged. It's that simple.
That's as simple as that.
And that's one thing that keeps many people, most people, are down on the bottom.
Well, you see, also, it's been conditioning also. It's been an original genetic interference with on our genetic level, atomic level. But
there
it's
is,
also been centuries.
Michael, excuse me again, but is there not a certain percentage of our DNA that is referred to as alien DNA
because they don't
know where it came from?
Yeah, and of course you keep hearing these pop terms like junk DNA. Anything they don't want you to let you know about is either called dark matter or antimatter or junk DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people are experts at tunnel visioning us, and it's called hidden in plain sight. We have all the information. You just have to know where to go to read it. In my book, there's a whole chapter on exactly what happened and why these very advanced beings, they were experts in DNA. Today, you can go into a laboratory, they sit you in a chair, they open up your skull, stick a few probes in there, and they already reduced you to the level of some sort of maniac. They
mm-hmm.
can do it with a few probes in half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what you can do to the human being when you have the full grasp of the chromosome, you know, and the genome.
And years ago, I think maybe it was the same for you, having studied this since you were very young, when the talk was made public about the chromosome and the plug-in, the DNA, and all the rest of it, it dawned on me immediately. I said, this is a machine of some kind.
Yeah.
And it's a plug-and-play machine.
They even show you that subliminally in the artwork that they use for the gene, where it's this like sort of Lego-like set floating in hyperspace.
Uh-huh.
The true people, the mystics of the ancient world, who talk about the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, they always knew that the Tree of Life was a symbol. In my book, I talk about how the old word down through the ages of the tree of genetics, the Tree of Life, was actually the Tree of Life, which had 22 pathways, which is the same thing as saying the 22 codons. The ancient people knew about this. The ancient, there was genetics going on. This is the great secret that they don't want us to know about, and they throw it in front of us again in modern times. But you know something? The first genetic experiments were done in Rosslyn Institute in Rosslyn in Scotland, which is a Knights Templar bastion up there.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. The very first experiments were done in Rosslyn Institute. People can look this up. And, of course, those in the know who've done their homework know what Rosslyn is and who controls Rosslyn and the families that are behind the Templar resurgency in Scotland. We're doing business as usual. This is the business as usual.
How many different races of beings, there have probably been innumerable, who have visited here over the last 50,000 years? There are people coming and going here now all the time from different, different cultures and races.
There have been many. I mean, what we're talking about here is over the millions of years of this planet's history, undoubtedly, there have been many visitations. So the group that we're talking about, we have to be very specific. That the group that is referred to as the fallen angels or the Nephilim are individuals who came here, but instead of just doing reconnaissance or checking us out or, you know,
studying us
or doing whatever they needed to do, they broke that cardinal rule. They actually did make contact with us and they interfered with us. And I explain in the book the whole syndrome of how they came here.
What
how
do we
they,
call that? A galactic code of conduct
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, prime directive or whatever you would like to call it,
sure.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they broke this covenant because, of course, the planet, the universe is an open system. Individual races can fly here and there, and surely we've been visited. We probably still are being visited. But what has to be understood is that this group that we refer to as the Nephilim, they actually broke the Great Commandment, and they did something that they knew that was, wrong.
They modified a species to serve them exactly.
Yes.
They customized us.
Yeah. It's a plan of hybridization. And again, the entire the science is now in for this. I mean, but I go to resources that have been in front of us all the time. Like in the Bible, for instance, you hear, the famous quotes, of course, in Genesis where they say, let us make man in our image.
Yes.
But do people know that in 1 Corinthians 15, it says something remarkable? It says, the quote goes, this is 1 Corinthians. It says, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam, a life-giving spirit. The spiritual did not come first, but the natural. And after that came the spiritual. Hmm. The first man was of the dust of the earth, the second man from heaven. So we turn a few pages in the Bible, and suddenly now we're talking about two Adams, right? And one of them they're calling from heaven, from up there, mm-hmm. or came by way of the heavens,
mm-hmm.
And they mean the physical heavens. And then they're talking about the earth version. Well, how come we haven't been hearing the priests and the clerics talking about these two Adams?
How many
they
references?
Tell us what they want.
Right, oh, of course. Well, ever since what the council in 320 or whatever it was tried to clean the whole thing up, and they missed some of it. They missed parts. How many references in the Bible are there to off-planet intelligences? Did anybody ever count them up? I'm sure.
I don't know, but I've got hundreds in the book and in the DVD on Atlantis. There's so many that they're without number. Sometimes it's just incredible that it's been before us in the Book of Job, especially in Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very important to the Book of Ezekiel is seminal to understand in this. But it's not just that, but in the Upanishads and the Vedas, in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, the world is literally filled with information about this. But again, because it all comes under the hand of the Royal Academy and the Royal Society, a lot of these documents were mistranslated.
They were and misunderstood, and to this day still suppressed. But the Vedas, the Vedic writings are beginning to be, I think, accepted by more and more.
Right, and retranslated. We have people like J.J. Hertak and others
clarified.
Who are, redoing it.
Yeah, it's about time. Those are absolutely astonishing ancient historical texts is what they are. Back in just a couple of minutes with Michael Tesarian, his book Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. This book is packed with facts and data. No speculation here. It's classic scholarship, and it's magnificently put together. And we will continue. Okay, we are back. I'm Jeff Rentz. That's R-E-N-S-E. And the website is rentz.com. If you haven't been there, please stop by and pay us a visit. I think you'll find your time to be most interesting there. Michael Tesarian is my guest this evening. We're talking about his book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. One of the biggest questions, right there at the top, is how did the phenomena of evil come into our world and into the consciousness of so many human beings? Now, I think it's pretty much a given, Michael. If we take the average man or woman and sit down with them, the average human, we will come to terms on most of the basic crucial issues, the golden rule and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, something happens when the masses get together and the controllers start to work. Evil. Was it always on the planet?
Well, this is the whole thing that is central to my work, and the answer is no, it was not. The forces of religion and the forces of science have set about cornering the market on the question of evil and saying to us that, they're going to give us the answer, and after 2,000 years, they've made things infinitely worse. These individuals should be given the pink slip. I mean, in the preface of the book that you were reading earlier, it says there that, the institutions of religion and science have been the worst perpetrators of evil we've ever had to endure on this planet. We need to then, look elsewhere for the solution. And a lot of people think, well, wait a minute, if you're not going to turn to the religion, if you're not going to turn to science, we're going to be left in a void there about this great question. And the answer is no, we don't.
Au contraire.
The ancient legends of our own forefathers, our own ancestors, are more than happy to tell us about the origins of evil, the war of the gods, the fight against light and darkness. No, It wasn't always there. It has a birthday. The concept of evil actually has a date of birth. It was because of this Nephilim intervention, which happened. This precipitated the coming of what we call evil into the world and into the consciousness of human beings. And we are going to, if we don't answer this problem, if we put this most important question aside, okay, yes, granted, it's a philosophical question, but it also is one of the most important questions of our age. We're running around spending millions of dollars answering this and that and the other, and yet these great metaphysical meta-themes, we just leave because we believe there's no answer. And we have inherited evil, we're passing it on to the next generation, we don't have any answers regarding this. We believe that it's just nature and evolution.
Is it genetic?
It is genetic, because when alien DNA was crossed with our ancestors' DNA, it created this proclivity for inhumanity and injustice that we see in the world. And it's not just Mother Nature, who's in perfect balance from the greatest neutron star to the smallest atom, that is in perfect equilibrium, could then suddenly make such a blunder in our highest species, the human race. It's an absolutely preposterous idea. But again, it's another cover-up.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, it's very, very important that to realize that this has an origin also, and that we do the remarkably horrific, sadistic, violent, unjust things to one another. And we, even if we don't act it out, we do have the inner moral quandary about what kind of way we're going to live, and the whole private war. This private war is the war in the blood. It's the war of the genes inside, the two persons that we have within ourselves, that the Arthurian tradition talks about as the red dragon and the white dragon that's forever in conflict. You know, the twins.
Yeah, yin-yang,
yes,
it's all there.
Exactly. All mythology is filled with it. And then we, because we have this deremption, because we have the schizoid problem inside ourselves genetically, then we create a schizogenic society. The mind, which is already in dualism, the mind, which is already split, we have emotions divided from the intellect, we have the body divided from the soul, whatever. All these divisions, we have gender divisions inside ourselves that Carl Jung was so beautiful to bring out. But then this perceiving mind then inevitably perceives devils and gods outside of itself. It's not that they exist, it's that we have put them there because the human race is in a terrible existential schism, which can be summed up as the term evil. And in May, I'm going to be at Conspiracy Con with Brian Hall and doing a talk on the origins of evil, again, approaching the work in the book, to really hammer this home, because this is the most important question of our age.
It's the question of our survival. How do we go about, like a dentist, going in and extracting these bad genes?
Well, you see, long ago, they were already, one of the pieces of disinformation exists. See, this hybridization program happened on Atlantis. And when people rebelled against the warlocks of Atlantis, they moved to Lemuria, which was another famous continent that existed at that time. And they set up a high culture, a high civilization. And on that civilization, before it was drowned under the waves, they did try to breed out this particular proclivity. But of course, that was... That program was defeated because the world suffered a pole shift.
Another name for that is eugenics, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The racial hygiene. There was an idea to, and through the centuries, there has been attempts to sort of breed it out, to suppress it, and to also change the way things are so that we will again live in a moral and paradisical place. But of course, we have a tremendous force for negativity out there that has anything but that desire for us, and they are leading us to the roads of perdition. They've not only tampered with our DNA. I mean, what we're talking about, legal sovereignty being broken and state sovereignty being demolished, which is one of the greatest crimes that we could imagine. That's true. But think that your own DNA has been interfered with, the human DNA of our ancestors. What more of a violation, what more of a rape could that be?
Couldn't be.
Yeah, so we need to know about this. Yeah. And again, when you turn to the ancient sources, they are talking about this. They called it the fall. The real fall. The real biting of the apple of the tree of good and evil, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of life, was originally to do with the human DNA. And when they say that Adam was sent out naked into the garden, that's just referring to intellectual nakedness, not physical nakedness. It's intellectual dumbing down that the Adamic race was put into the world, you know, in a naked state where they would not be able to access the centers of higher intelligence and higher spirituality.
I am guilty. If people think of me this way, as being negative about the immediate future. I just have never in my wildest dreams before these recent years,
mm-hmm.
Imagine the level of technology, the sophistication, the absolutely insidious mass programming and control, the shaping, the manipulation from cradle to grave of countless tens, hundreds of millions of people. The Chinese, of course, had as their big goal was to put a television in every home by the year 2001, mm-hmm. and they did it. And they know this is the key. It's unregulated. There are things embedded in the audio and video images mm-hmm. and sounds coming mm-hmm. out of television, which are not only brain and training,
right.
but they're brain training. They're not,
yep.
they don't get the brain to follow along. They are instructing the brain.
It's brilliant. Entrainment.
No, beyond brilliant. And they don't have to do anything. People stare at the damn television and they're being programmed and trained all the time. This isn't Hitler or any other
no.
past demagogue using the media, the radio, and live rallies. This is massive, 24 hours a day.
And we turn to it because we're impoverished inside. They've had a drip feed. They've taken away our soul. They've instilled in us such an emptiness
and
of
given
void.
Us a remote control with 500 channels.
That's it. And of course, we need to receive. Now, I have a DVD that is coming out, part of a 6-DVD series that I'm doing, and one of them is called The Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media. And it has to do, I have a whole thing on this. It's 8 hours long, talking specifically about what you're talking about and how the Magi, the old sorcery, the old voodoo, is not dead and gone. We have silicon sorcerers and ivory tower witch doctors. And where does the word media come from? You know, go into the whole occult origins of this. And I taught this to children, Jeff. I taught children for 2 years, communication. And also about how they were being subliminally manipulated. So I have grassroots experience about how the lives of children are dramatically changed when you tell those children that it's not that they are broken, but that their civilization, their culture is broken. Do you know the weight that gets lifted off the shoulders of children when they realize there's nothing wrong with them, that they're being inundated with a psychic dictatorship, a tyranny, and that there's nothing whatever wrong with them? And they realize that somebody's telling them this. You know what incredible allies they become in the pursuit
imagine.
Of light?
I truly can imagine.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to see. So my work is very much focused on the youth. But more importantly is this whole question of evil. If we just believe that Mother Nature brought it about, then isn't it as good as saying that Mother Nature is in some way flawed or Mother Nature is in some way ignorant? And then that, of course, becomes the perfect justification for our ecocide, for the murder of animals, for the destruction of our planet. You know, they have instilled in us some very, very pernicious lies that need to be revisited again. We need to give the pink slip to the enclaves of religion and science because they haven't answered the question. In fact, they've created more evil than we can even imagine that exists on this planet.
Than we can even imagine.
Than we can even imagine. Do you know
that
this, one interesting thing is that when the Nephilim came here about 50,000 years ago, in the Bible, as it says in the Book of Enoch, they did originally try, before they actually tried to do the genetic manipulation of us, they tried to mate with the women, and it didn't work. Here's a quote from the Ethiopian ancient book from Ethiopia called the Kebra Nagast, right? Here's a small mm-hmm. quote. It says, "And the daughters of Cain, with whom the angels had companied, conceived, but they were unable to bring forth their children, and they died. And of the children who were in their wombs, some died, and some others came forth, having split open the bellies of their mothers. They came forth by their navels." So here's something like out of Rosemary's Baby, where these aliens first tried to mate with the women, and it didn't work, and these monsters were born, and that's where they decided then to go to the next step and do the most taboo thing, which was actually to interfere with the human DNA.
Wow.
And this is what originally caused the majority of our psychic schizophrenia, basically, is what you could say.
Ethiopian ancient texts.
Yeah, an ancient text. It's just one of many texts I refer to in the book that go into this.
This is, again, a remarkable book. It should be read by everyone. Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. And we'll be back in just a minute with Michael Tesarian to continue our conversation. Michael Tesarian is my guest, and he has quite a bit. This book is, it's almost like picking up the most user-friendly reference book I've ever picked up. I don't mean that in anything but the highest compliment. It's loaded.
Every I appreciate
page,
that.
You're welcome. Every page you open, literally it's one of those books that I can open any page and start reading and be, if not interested, fascinated.
That's well, I have put 3 decades of work into it, and the reason is because I'm not just a person who's interested in ancient history. Yes, I have that interest, and I'm interested, I was interested first in my own Celtic ancestry and all of that. Yeah, sure, it's an interest. But the main motive for me to put this work was a deep and abiding interest in what we as the human race are going through now. Let there be no mistake about this. This is not a book of just dry ancient history about what happened, thousands of years ago.
I salute you for putting basically all of it in one book and not cranking out 11 or 12 books.
I have no interest in even doing another book on this. I do some conferences, do radio, but the thing is that, there's no need for important answers can be given in a very concise way. We don't have the time anymore to be running hither and thither.
No, we are running short of time.
We very much are. So the book was dedicated to compressing a lot of research, but making it very grassroots, because I'm not from the science world. I'm not from the computer world. I'm from the metaphysical tradition. That's why my mother was a world famous clairvoyant. We come only from that tradition of grassroots approaches. So we didn't want to couch all of this. We didn't want to make it too academic and too intellectually heavy and too abstract. It's very simple language and explains our history, the most interesting subject in the world, which is who we are and where are we going,
I receive books all the time in the mail. I appreciate people sending them. Publishers send them, authors send them. And I cannot tell you how many books I get. The lost secret of the Templars discovered. the Ark of the Covenant found, and the secrets of the Ark of the. It goes on and on and on and on and on. It's an endless litany of basically nothing. It's all speculation.
It's
predicated on other people's work, which was predicated on speculation in the beginning. So it's just amazing. I don't know who reads these books.
I don't know why people just don't cut to the chase. I've never seen anything like it.
That's exactly.
You got two extremes. You either have newspapers where it's written for an eighth grader of one-line sentences, which is the majority of the human race reads that rubbish, or you've got the most abstract, convoluted, where's the point kind of material. It's important to find the middle ground.
It's hard. It's hard to. Okay. Now, is the New World Order really something new? We partially answered that before, but no. What's new is that they have reared their heads and they now are in control to the extent that they feel they have to play no more subtle games. They are doing it right, not only hiding in the open, but they're force-feeding people in the open. And people are not complaining much anymore.
No. And they have expertise of many millennia. The people that we're talking about were wealthy beyond our wildest dreams in the first centuries A.D. I have a lot of people coming to me and saying, how could just some secret society just come in and take over Michael? And I go, well, you either haven't read the book properly or you haven't listened to what I said, because I am not saying that any individual mafioso-type secret society has just walked in and taken over.
Right.
No, it's not like that. These individuals have created the very cities in which we live. They have created the industries in which we live. They have manipulated the history, which is our history.
And if you're a friend of Jordan Maxwell, so am I.
If you listen
to Jordan, they have left their calling cards, their symbology, their symbols all over the place.
Absolutely. I've done a lot of work with Jordan, and we are both very much in the same mindset that these individuals are not from this earth, that their end game is coming right now, very soon. You were right. We won't even have to wait till 2012, which is the Maya end date. We're going to see it by 2007. The person from Middle America is going to be telling us. You see, you were talking about being sort of more negative. I understand what you mean.
Excuse me, but I didn't finish my thought. What I really am is a realist.
I was going to say, that's what it's all about, is realism. Do you know something? As again, people need not be afraid. They should be actually glad that this happened, because it's more important for a truth to come out on the surface. I mean, the whole homeopathic idea is to bring the disease out in the front, in the forefront, to strengthen the immune system so that you don't get disease. Well, there's also an immune system of the intelligence. There's also an immune system of the planet Earth. There's an immune system in the psyche, the collective psyche. We need to strengthen our immune system to get rid of these pathogenic forces that have been preying over us for many millennia now. And I personally believe, Jeff, and I want to really emphasize this, that the day of these individuals, these global tyrants, is coming. And all the saber rattling and all the machinations, they're doing it because they know that their time is short. Now, whether you buy into my philosophies about the
I agree with you. There is a frenetic energy about what they're doing. They know this is their window, and if they don't take it now, they're going to lose.
That's right. Now, look how old this is. Adam Weishaupt in the 1700s was the creator of the Illuminati. This is one of the most powerful secret societies in the world, for those who don't know. The Illuminati from Bavaria. Well, when he died, he passed the mantle on, and the controller of the Illuminati became a man called Giuseppe Mazzini from Italy, right? Then he later passed it to the American Albert Pike. But Giuseppe Mazzini himself said something remarkable. This is his own quote. He said, "We form an association of brothers in all points of the globe. Yet there is one unseen that can hardly be felt, yet it weighs upon us. Whence comes it? Where is it? No one knows, or at least no one tells. This association is secret, even to us, the veterans of the secret societies.
So, fascinating.
Yeah, this is, you know, on the dollar bill is the Illuminati symbolism that Jordan Maxwell has pointed out, the pyramid, the 13 levels, and then the detached eye at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And both Jordan and I believe that this eye at the top is the top of the pyramid. Who are the people controlling the rest of the pyramid? That's what even Mazzini, the top of the Illuminati, is saying. There is yet forces above us that are frightening to us, that control even us.
Remarkable, and certainly may well be exactly what it is, the eye up there.
But we're about to expose these individuals. I believe that the first time in history they've ever had a true, authentic, and proactive opposition is now. So there's no reason for people to feel pessimistic at all.
Right, I agree. All right. This is big stuff in a way. Now, this is the biggest set of questions of all, and they're presented, discussed, and basically answered with a cascade of fascinating quotes and citations and references, and it's all here. Back in just a minute with Michael Tsarian. You said something interesting a few minutes ago, Michael, which I hardly concur with. 2012 doesn't mean anything. It's just that they had to stop their calendar somewhere, and they just ended at 12. Big deal. I don't see it as being any portentous any more than any other number. But I do think that bad times are going to be probably 27, 2008.
Right.
Look for the I think a lot is going to turn on the Olympics in Beijing, frankly. I think after that is done, the Chinese will have scored a tremendous world coup. And I think then, and only then, will they make their move. Otherwise, they'll make it now. I think as they build up to the Olympics, we're going to have relative quiet from the Chinese. They'll be working behind the scenes, but they are brilliant tacticians.
Yeah, and I think that you're a very clear channel, and people should really take heed of what you just said, because even from an astrological point of view, there are more major conjunctions and alignments in 2007 that interest me far more than even the ones coming up in 2012. So I completely agree with what you're saying.
Right. As we talked about before the break, these people are running out of time. They're making their move now.
Yes, they are.
And I don't think they're going to subvert the Chinese. I don't think they're going to subvert the Indians. I don't think they're going to subvert if resurgent Russia and Russian nationalism prevail. This world is not locked up. They're making their move, but I don't think they're going to pull it off. I don't see it.
Well, they also know that there's many other subliminal reasons for invoking wars. I mean, America has bombed 250 different countries just since the advent of the United Nations. So there's no question about that. They know the various benefits, not just economically, but also psychologically, in order to bleed off people's frustrations that build up over time, a lot of psychic toxicity. They know that a good war now and again, just like good sports and good pornography, is a very healthy way to, an unhealthy way to get people to not look at who they really are, not do their real emotional homework.
All misdirection, all of it.
Sure,
of
just
it.
Believe in Big Daddy. Daddy will show you how to focus all your negative energy.
And now, Michael, and it's tragic to see what our young people are growing up in a world, a virtual world, a computer world, a world of reactive existence, a world of hive, of group mentality, of groupthink, of the individual is shunned. The peer pressure to keep people in line is withering. And if it doesn't work with peer pressure, you've got the worldwide pharmaceutical combine to medicate countless tens of millions of children into submission.
That's right. And then just to fill the void by giving them all sorts of stupid technical bromides, cell phones and all other sorts of nonsense.
Which will give them brain tumors, but that's another story.
Yeah, but fill the void. The most important thing is stop people
always
looking it in.
Keep them, what they're doing, Michael, and you know it, they're bringing these kids up now and basically addicting them to an amphetamine style of life.
That's
whether
right.
it's visual, whether it's audio, whether it's friends, whether it's always in contact on the cell phone, it doesn't matter. This is a pace, it's a cadence, it is frenetic, and it is utterly, ruthlessly addictive to children.
I was introducing, remember I told you I was doing teaching kids in the Bay Area for several years, and when I was talking to them about this group, I basically used the term kleptocracy, the kleptomaniacs. These are a technocracy that steal from you your very soul. And one of the ways that they do it is through subliminally manipulating and oppressing you, not giving you the drugs, giving you the pharmaceuticals, taking away your center, taking away your innocence. You know, they don't teach you how to think, but they teach you what to think.
Their whole goal is to fragment, not to build cohesion.
I made the point to the kids, and they really got it, that they're being taught what to think, not how to think. I said, the difference with me standing here in front of you is I'm going to help you learn how to think, not what to think. You know, I'm not going to point you in any directions or assert any tyrannical point of view. We're going to turn your, you know, really pointing out to people that there's a difference between the brain and the mind.
There's a total difference between the brain and the mind. I get these wonderful emails, not often enough, but from people, they'll tell me, Jeff, we listen to you and we agree and we pull the plug on the TV. We tried it for a week.
Yeah.
And after 4 or 5 days, our kids began to grow again. They began to draw, they began to read, they began to create for themselves, to inquire. It took several days. They had to go through literal withdrawals.
Well, you know, I heard an interesting fact the other day, and whether you like him or you don't, Michael Moore, just as a case in point, his book, which was, what's it called, Stupid White Men or whatever it was, It was a book that got on the bestseller. So just use this as an example. 80% of the people who read the newspapers, there was only 1 million people in this country, and it was barely 1 million that picked up that book and actually bought it and read it. How many millions of people here? And this is a book that reached the bestseller. We're not talking about whether you like them or whether you don't. I'm just saying here's a book that was pretty much on controversial matters, that was already on the bestseller list, had all the publicity, the media backing it. He had millions of dollars to put into it and all the rest of it, and barely 1 million people actually read the actual physical book. Yet millions read the newspapers and millions watch TV. You know, so this is the diet, this sorcery that's coming over.
No one's reading.
Nobody's reading. And they're sitting there passively receiving this sorcery, what I basically call sorcery, psychic sorcery, from the television. Because, you know, one gerrymander who wrote the book Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television, he said something very interesting. He said that the reason why people are addicted to watching television is because it gives them, and they don't have to give anything back. We have been taught to give so much, to be so damn altruistic in this country, because I'm from the school of Ayn Rand, personally, and I do not believe in altruism. But we have become so altruistic that we give in order to get even the smallest little recompense come back. So sitting in front of a television is this promise that you don't have to move, you don't have to think, you don't have to do anything. We will give you all the entertainment. It's very addictive, that.
It's a take culture.
Yes. It's become a take culture because of the other side of that is we have to give all of our work, all of our effort, just to make ends meet. We're so sick of giving for such a little bit of a return. The television becomes very attractive because we don't have to give anything at all. We don't even have to move.
It's an astonishing tool.
Isn't it incredible what goes on?
Yeah. Very few people have accurately essayed what it is and what it's doing. It is the most powerful weapon ever unleashed
Planet. Check this out. Here's in the 1700s, the television wasn't created then, but you'll get the idea from this incredible quote. This is from the Duke of Brunswick, who is the head of World Freemasonry, okay? And he wanted to disband World Freemasonry. And the reason why he did that is because he knew that it had been infiltrated by the Illuminati, by satanic, Luciferian principles. And here's what he got up and said. This is his own words. This is the Duke of Brunswick. He says, I have been convinced that we as an order have come under the power of some very evil occult order. Profoundly versed in science, both occult and otherwise, though not infallible, their methods being black magic. That is to say, electromagnetic power, hypnotism, and powerful suggestion. We are convinced that this order is being controlled by some sun order after the nature of the Illuminati, if not by that order itself. So here is the top Mason in the world at that time literally telling us that when he's talking about black magic, he is not speaking about some witch doctrine. He's speaking specifically about electromagnetic power, hypnotism, and powerful suggestion.
He did say, those are exact words.
I have it in the book, and I have these quotes like this in the book from top Masons warning their own order. George Washington also warned his own order about these forces, that they were using this kind of power. Now, if it's that old, think how sophisticated they are today. And that will make
remarkable
sense of the world we're in.
And what year was that in, that quote?
1700, 1795.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
Well, he knew. Our friend Jordan Maxwell said of Atlantis, alien visitation and genetic manipulation by my guest Michael Tesarian, compulsory reading for those with a passionate desire to know the true origins of conflict on the planet and in the psyche. Time to have Jordan back on the program.
I'd say so. He's a very busy guy. He loves you, and he definitely told me about you in the early days when I came to the country and was overwhelmed by the amount of wisdom, of the guests that you've had on. So it's a real privilege for me to be on.
Well,
also want to let your audiences know that book is only available through me, but in order to keep it pure, I didn't go with any big name publisher or anything like that. It's only available through myself. So.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. If you click on Michael's name and go to his website, which is TaroScopes, Taroscopes.com, and click on, you'll find products. I think it's, was it products? Anyway.
Well, if they click on Atlantis, they'll get
there
the book. And
okay.
I have a number as well. May I give that out?
Please.
And yeah, Taroscopes.com. It's all one word. Taroscopes. And if people want the ebook, we also have that as an ebook so people can have it on their laptop, you know.
Oh, how nice.
That's if they go to atlantisbook.com. It's all one word, atlantisbook.com. They can also order the hard copy or the ebook.
One thing that has been amazing to me, and it is an ever-widening gap. It is absolutely outstripping us. It's not even a race. And the question on the back of your book puts it very succinctly. Why has our technological expertise far outreached our psychological and spiritual development? It's a key question, but let me tell you, folks, on an hourly and daily basis, technology is leaping so far ahead, it's almost as if we have our feet glued to the ground. Nanotechnology exploding all over the planet. We are literally on the threshold of stepping into realms where I don't feel as a species we really have any right to go because we're not competent enough anymore to take care of it. It's going to be misused and abused like everything else is. And that's why I hear the clock ticking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Tick, tick, tick.
Well, the combined military expenditures of all the world's governments, that's just in 1987.
Yeah.
Let's not even bother with what we're doing with the billions for this war, but just in 1987, folks, the combined military expenditures of all the world's governments was so large that all of the social programs of the United Nations could be financed for 300 years. So let's forget about, you know, all the starving millions, and we haven't got money for this, and we haven't got money for that, and we haven't got money for the indigenous people in America who are starving right outside our own doors. Yeah, we do have the money for that. We have the money here to fund all of the programs of the United Nations for 300 years, but we better ask some serious questions here. Why is it all going to technology? Why is it all going to the military? It's not just because of enemies. These enemies are designer enemies. They've been created on paper for us.
Right. Of course.
They have as much reality.
Other cartoon characters.
Exactly. So then what is this big dialectic that's been playing itself out? If you don't have Catholics, you have Protestants. If you have black, you have white. If you have reds, you have the blues.
Divide and conquer.
Right. And it's been going on for a very, very long time, all the way back to the ancient dynasties.
Mm-hmm.
The symbolism, as Jordan Maxwell has shown, proves this. The double-headed eagle of Freemasonry, the triangle with its, you know, the whole idea of the dialectic. This is something that's been set in motion on the human race many millennia ago, and we are now in the end game. We are reaching the point of the ending. And that can either be in our favor, if we grasp to the truth, the roots of what is real, or we can be completely, you know, brushed aside as unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my book, I talk about how the Nephilim are planning to vacate this planet. They've had difficulty doing that for many thousands of years. And the Tudor dynasty in England was set to use some powers, set to subjugate the whole world, which is why we have a thing called the British Empire, which basically was through the Hudson Bay Company and the East
mm-hmm.
India Company
mm-hmm.
and these different organizations. These are the individuals who wanted to subjugate the Earth in order to build the technology that they had lost in the Great Pole Shift, because you can't have a pole shift on this planet and then have five continents sinking beneath the oceans and have all of the computers and the hardware and the spaceships all intact. That all got destroyed many thousands of years ago. So the idea of these Nephilim was to regroup, which is what they did in the Sumerian Babylonian area of Asia Minor, because that was the new equator. And they set themselves up in this place that was the only place that could sustain life all the year through. And basically that's where we have the rise of what we call the historical empires, AD. They come from these periods about 7 to 10,000 years ago, but move up until the Industrial Revolution. We have had a consistent program of moving mankind forward so that they can rebuild the sophisticated technology and hardware. But it has an occult agenda. You only have to look at the symbolism that these companies use to know this. And if you do a little bit of homework, in my book I've got all the information on this, that the technology of the world is not new. It is a very old science. And it has the most serious impact for the human race. And we need to have this. We need to have the answers, and we need to have them now.
What do you think about the those who propose that the globalist Illuminati, the modern-day Nephilim, have as an agenda for us is to reduce the world population by 80%.
They've always been doing that. That's not a new thing. They've the campaign against womankind, for instance. In the book, I talk about the suppression of women. Do you think that it's only in recent times that they rose up, you know, under the Dominican order and they, you know, perpetrated the witch hunts? Oh, my God. The crimes against the women have been done for thousands of years because of a particular crime that was done by women against these Nephilim approximately 30,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then they had the Black Death. If you read William Bramley's Gods of Eden, mm-hmm. he absolutely conclusively proves in that book that the so-called Black Plague was created artificially. We have AIDS that Dr. Robert Strecker has conclusively proved was man-made. We have in Ireland the famine. How come there was never a famine before and there's never been a famine since? Mm-hmm. My research in Ireland took me into the field to discover that the famine was orchestrated by the elites of the British government mm-hmm. in order to so impoverish and annihilate the people that they would then be motivated, because it's not easy to get European people, nor is it easy to get Irish people to leave their home. It's not something that people do naturally. To do that, you've got to precipitate such absolute horrors that people will then come to the New World, America, to push the wheel over here to get the country jump-started. But you can't do that without incredible utopian philosophies, the intellectuals disseminating this fake utopian philosophy on the one hand, so that intellectuals will buy into it. Mm-hmm. And then to get the Johnny Jack from the street in order to go over, you've got to make life so unbearable for him in Europe, which is exactly what the plan was. And then you lay on these million-dollar ships to get them to come over to the United States. Wait a minute. You don't have money to feed them or bring them cartons of food, but you have money to put them on these expensive vessels and ship them over to the New World? Is there something wrong with this picture?
Something's really wrong with the picture.
Right.
Famine. Look what Stalin did to in Ukraine.
200 million. Yuri Lina?
I don't even know.
I saw on your website you carry a book by a fantastic scholar. He's a friend of mine called Yuri Lina. Yuri Lina was one of the top men on the KGB hit list. He lives in Europe now, and he wrote a book called Architects of Deception, which goes into this whole thing about the real crimes of Stalin, you know?
And, we figure 50 million plus, I don't know. We'll never know.
Yuri Lina, who's an expert in this, and he was hunted. Yeah. This man was literally hunted by the KGB throughout Europe. He says that the figure is a massive 200 million, all in all, through Lenin, you know, from Trotsky, Lenin, and Stalin. Taken all, the genocide of Russia has been untold. Like Anthony J. Hilder knows, the history of Africa, the massacres that have taken place there is another a dark, shadowy page of history. The true occult history of Africa has never been told. The true occult history of Ireland has never been told. The true occult history of America has never been told until now. These individuals we're talking about have never had a proactive kind of opposition. How could they? Your forefathers and mine were trapped to their feudal villages. It was literally a crime to stray more than 5 or 10 miles from outside your own village. Right? This is recent history. Two generations back, our parents didn't even have the luxury of going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My father remembers when he barely went to school in Ireland. You know, so we are only now coming up to be any kind of real intellectually empowered opposition. But I just heard Alex Jones. He's right. The Third World War is on its way. I mean, Ariel Sharon.
Oh, yeah.
The president of Israel in 2002, he said, World War III is coming, whether you like it or not. The 9/11 attacks were just the beginning. Now, wait a minute. That's no conspiracy theorist. That's Ariel Sharon, the head of the Zionist factions, who are busy day and night working on this strategy, and who basically control the American government.
Basically.
There's the man telling you from his horse's mouth that World War III is on its way.
No, they're not. Again, they're not hiding anything.
No.
They are telegraphing everything they're going to do.
And we're just so dumbed down.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with people.
Well,
you know, I mean,
so
I do know what's wrong.
They're so desensitized. They can't figure it out. And they don't. Look, it's too easy. Michael Cremo, The Hidden History of the Human Race, one of the great titles of any book ever. The Hidden History of the Human Race is so enormous. It is so absolutely fantastic that most people would just dismiss it. They couldn't handle it.
Well, can I tell you something very interesting?
Yeah, we have about a minute.
We have a minute. Well, it's hard to get into, but remember we were talking about whether the real original Nephilim are alive or not?
Yes.
Or whether it was their bloodline? The end of my work shows that the reason it's precipitating the end game is because, in fact, the tombs of some of these individuals, these ancient beings, are in Iraq and in Babylon. And there's a program to disinter some of these ancient beings and reawaken them genetically.
I've heard there are things going on there that have to do with our ancient past.
Right.
I don't know specific knowledge what it is, but there are other things at play there.
Right. And we're going to be seeing something very interesting happening which has a lot to do with prophecy. In the book and in the DVDs, I go into this. People can contact me if they need any more information. At taroscopes.com or atlantisbook.com.
And again, the book Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, only available through Michael's website at taroscopes.com. Thank you, Michael, for being here. Thank you for bringing back great classical, honest research.